So Matthew 21 to 16. The parable of the workers in the vineyard. For the kingdom of heaven is like a landowner who went out early in the morning to hire men to work in his vineyard. He agreed to pay them a denarius for the day and sent them into his vineyard. About the third hour, he went out and saw others standing in the marketplace doing nothing. He told them, "You also go and work in my vineyard, and I will pay you whatever is right." So they went. He went out again about the sixth hour and the ninth hour and did the same thing. About the 11th hour, he went out and found still others standing around. He asked them, "Why have you been standing there all day doing nothing?" "Because no one has hired us," they answered. He said to them, "You also go and work in my vineyard." When evening came, the owner of the vineyard said to his foreman, "Call the workers and pay them their wages, beginning with the last ones hired and going on to the first." The workers who were hired about the 11th hour came, and each received a denarius. So when those who came who were hired first, they expected to receive more. But each of them also received a denarius. When they received it, they began to grumble against the landowner. "These men who were hired last worked only 1 hour," they said, "and you have made them equal to us who have borne the burden of the work and the heat of the day." But he answered one of them, "Friend, I am not being unfair to you. Didn't you agree to work for a denarius? Take your pay and go. I want to give the man who is hired last the same as I gave you. Don't I have this right to do what I want with my own money? Or are you envious because I am generous?" So the last will be first, and the first will be last. This is the word of the Lord.
Well, it's lovely to be with you today. Really nice to catch up with Morris and Linda. Over the weekend, very grateful for their hospitality, and it's been lovely to see them again. Bring you greetings from the church in Mold. They're beginning to recover from the previous 13 years. You'll be glad to know. I'm sure you can empathise with that. We're going to look at this parable this morning in Matthew 20, and I reckon of all the parables that Jesus told, this is the one that challenges me the most. Because there is a big part of me that wants to side with the baddies in the story. Every time I read it, there's a part of me that can't help but think, but they've got a point, haven't they? I mean, I know Jesus says that they were wrong, but I'm not so sure. And that's the thing about Jesus' parables, isn't it? They suck you in, and then they turn you upside down and they give you a good shaking. We're in a section of Matthew's Gospel, which is particularly about the upside down nature of God's kingdom. Who's the greatest in the kingdom of God? The disciples ask in chapter 18, and Jesus calls over a little child and says, "You want to be great? Well, you need to be like this little child, humble and dependent." Chapter 19, the disciples still haven't got it. When the parents bring their children to see Jesus, the disciples shoo them away. He's too busy. He's too important to have time for little children. But Jesus welcomes them. And then when a rich young ruler turns up later in the chapter, and the disciples are no doubt thinking to themselves, well, he is just the sort of guy that we need on our team. But Jesus lets him go. And now this parable is sandwiched between Jesus saying in chapter 19, verse 30, the end of chapter 19, "But many who are first will be last, and many who are last will be first." And then chapter 20, verse 16, "So the last will be first, and the first will be last." And this parable is sandwiched in between those two statements. And so we should expect our values to be turned upside down by this parable. And if it doesn't feel like that, then you probably haven't understood what Jesus is saying to us this morning. So here's the story. A wealthy landowner, as they would in those days, goes out into the marketplace where the workers would congregate, waiting to be hired for a day's work. He heads out at 6 o'clock in the morning, and he picks some workers for a 12-hour shift in his vineyard. But then he goes out again at 9 in the morning, then at 12 noon, then at 3 in the afternoon, and finally again at 5 in the afternoon, each time getting more workers for his vineyard. And this is a story about God's kingdom. And maybe we should just notice, although it's not the main point that Jesus is making in the parable, but Jesus does throw it in here for us. We should notice that there is always more work to do in God's kingdom. God's kingdom work is almost a bottomless pit. Even at 5 in the afternoon, he's still after more workers for his vineyard. Why have you been standing around doing nothing all day? He says, there's plenty to do. And maybe Jesus would say the same to some of us this morning. Why aren't you working in my kingdom? There's plenty to do. And you're hanging around. You're doing nothing. Sometimes we're waiting to be asked. Well, sometimes we only want to do certain things. We only want to serve in certain ways. And so we say that we can't get involved because we haven't been asked to serve in those ways. But if we're just willing to serve in whatever needs doing, then there is plenty to get involved with. There are, I don't know, 80, 90, 100 people sitting around you this morning, need someone to listen to them, maybe with a burden to share. Every single one of us, even this morning, could serve in God's kingdom just by asking the person next to us after the service how they're doing and listening to them, maybe praying for them. There is always more work to be done in God's kingdom. And that also means that there will always be more work to do. Some of us don't find that easy to live with. Some of us are trying to do it all. We see needs around us and we feel like we ought to help. I must help. We feel we can't say no. But we need to realize we'll never do it all. We need to face up to what Jesus himself had to face up to, that we're human, as he was human. In order to preach and heal in one town, Jesus had to say no to another town. With equally needy people, in the limitations of his human nature, Jesus couldn't help everyone. He didn't try to. He didn't burn himself out, rushing around from place to place, from person to person. He accepted his humanness. And we need to as well. So the owner of the vineyard employs all these workers for the day. And it's at the end of the day. It's at 6 o'clock in the evening when the workers line up to receive their pay that everything begins to kick off. That's when the problems begin. And there's at least three problems that the parable raises for us that teach us about God and quite possibly teach us a few things about ourselves too. So first of all, there is the problem of comparisons. The problem of comparisons. All of us who have had children have heard the words many times. It's not fair. That's not fair. And none of us have had to teach our children those words. They're instinctive words. One child appears to have a smaller portion of chips or a larger portion of broccoli, and you'll hear those words. That's not fair. One child gets a treat and the other doesn't. It's not fair. What's going on? It's the problem of comparisons. They look at what they've got, and then they look at what their brother or sister has got. And they assess whether they are being treated fairly or not. After today, Morris and I are driving off to a conference this week in Norfolk. And you imagine that I was a generous dad. And imagine while I was away, I bought my children a treat. Three children bought each of them a treat for when I go home. And let's say for the oldest two, Erin and Yastin, I bought them a 20p Freddo. Now, they would be absolutely thrilled with that. They love 20p Freddos. But then imagine that I got for the younger one, Alice, a box of celebrations. Well, Can you imagine the outrage that there would be in our house if I came home with those treats? It would be World War III. Can you imagine what my wife would say? You never buy me anything. No, sorry. I joke. But it wouldn't be long before one of the kids used those words. That's not fair. But did I have to buy any of them a gift? No. Did I owe them a gift? No. You can imagine those workers in the queue for their wages at the end of the day, and the guys who are hired first at the front of the queue, and they're paid a denarius. It was a standard day's wage. They weren't being ripped off in any way. And they see the guys who have been hired at 5 o'clock, and they see them in front of them, and they receive a denarius too. And you can imagine the guys at the back of the queue who've been there 12 hours, you can imagine them nudging each other and saying, those guys who've only been here an hour, they got a denarius. We might get 10 or 12 denarii. We could probably take a couple of weeks holiday after this. But then they get a denarius too. And there's outrage. Because actually we adults aren't so very different to children. It's not fair. And I can't help but think that they've got a point. These guys who are hired first, there's a big part of me that wants to say, yeah, that doesn't seem fair. Jesus is sucking us in, isn't he? He's sucking us in and he's getting us to look at our values and see how different our values are to the values of his kingdom. Was the landowner unfair? Did he cheat them in some way? Well, no. He gave them what he'd agreed to give them. It was a standard day's pay. They knew that was what they were going to get when they started the day's work. But don't we do this? We don't just look at what we've got. If we did, we might be quite content. But we look at what others have got. We compare ourselves. I can be quite content with my life until I go on Facebook. And I see other people's lives. I see all the friends that they've got. I see the fun things they're doing. I see the conferences that they're invited to speak at. Why can't I be that popular, I think? Why is my life so dull? That is a major problem of social media, that we want other people to see the best bits about our lives. We want people to see us when we're happy and successful and popular and beautiful. And what effect does that have on other people, though? Or maybe you look in the mirror in the morning and you think you look fine until you meet your friend. How does she look so good? Why can't I get new clothes all the time too? Why can't my hair look like that? Maybe you look around church and you think, why can't I be that gifted? Why do people seem to gravitate towards them and share with them, and they don't seem to share things with me? Why are they so confident? Maybe you look at other people's families or their marriages and they seem so happy. Their kids are so polite. We feel hard done by. It's not fair, we might think. A preacher in the States called Kevin DeYoung, in a sermon on this passage, he says that can be a whole way of looking at life. He says it's like putting on a pair of glasses each morning, and we look at everything and with that sense that it's not fair, we're owed more, I have a right to more, I'm entitled to better. What's life like when you look at it like that, through those glasses? It's pretty miserable. We're dissatisfied, we're resentful, we're jealous, we're always complaining about something. It's a self-absorbed life, everything's about me and how it makes me feel. We resent other people's successes. We resent their happiness because of the impact it has on me. It's a self-protecting life. We only love and relate to people who make us feel good about ourselves. We avoid people who make us feel inadequate in some way. We serve weak people, but we can't serve strong people because they intimidate us. It's not great. Some of us maybe feeling quite depressed. Yes, I do that. I feel like that. I wonder if that is how you see life. It's not fair. Can I see that jealousy, that resentment in my life? Maybe I'm wearing those glasses this morning. Well, there's good news coming in a minute, but not yet. There's a couple more problems, first of all. The problem of comparisons. Secondly, the problem of generosity. One writer on this parable says it's not the greed of the landowner that angers the all-day workers. It's his generosity. It's his grace. And that's it, isn't it? It's not that he's held something back from them. That's not their complaint. Their complaint is that he's given to others who they think don't deserve it. That's what they don't like. They're envious of his generosity. And actually, don't you have some sympathy with them? They've worked 12 hours and then these guys rock up with an hour to go and they get paid the same as them. I have some sympathy with them. The vineyard was a common picture in the Old Testament of God's kingdom. At that time, Israel was God's vineyard, God's kingdom. And what annoyed the Jews when Jesus came along was that Jesus welcomed completely the wrong sort of people into his kingdom. He welcomed sinners and tax collectors and Samaritans and even Gentiles. And you can imagine them thinking something like this to themselves: look how long we've been around. Look how hard we've worked over the centuries. We were in slavery in Egypt. We were 40 years traipsing through the wilderness. We had to battle our way into the promised land. Then we were in exile. And then you come along and you invite in these Gentile come latelys. They resented God's generosity to people they thought didn't deserve it. They didn't like grace. I was talking to a friend who told me about a bit of a disagreement amongst the leaders of a kids club he was involved in his church. And there were some kids from a pretty rough council estate about a mile away from the church who'd come along to the holiday Bible club that the church had run. And then afterwards they'd wanted to come along to the weekly children's meetings on a Friday night. But their parents either couldn't or wouldn't make the effort to bring them along to that. And so one of the leaders had offered to drive around that estate and pick up those children each week for the kids club. But the other leaders wouldn't help with those lifts. They thought if those parents won't make the effort, then why should we help? They resented generosity, undeserved generosity as they saw it to those children. I wonder, how do we feel about people who've got themselves into a mess? We might be quite willing to help people who are victims of their circumstances outside of their control, but what about people who are authors of their own problems? I wonder, do we resent generosity towards them? Look how hard we've worked, we're sort of thinking, and surely they should do the same. But is that how God treated us? An application of this is how we are welcoming new people into the church. I don't just mean on their first or the second visit, but how we are welcoming people right into the church family. Someone said there's a big difference between being friendly and being friends. Friendly's easy, but to extend your friendship circle and let people in. I wonder, do we feel that the church belongs more to us because we've been here from the start, maybe, or 20 years, or however long it is? And people may feel welcomed, but do they feel accepted into the church? Or another application is, how do we feel about people who don't do as much as us in church life? I think that's a really tough one. People who don't seem to be as committed as we are. We may not feel the church belongs more to us because of our tenure, but we may feel it belongs more to us because of our commitment, the time that we give and they don't. And I wonder if we resent them. Who do those layabouts think they are trying to change our church? But the church doesn't belong to any of us. However long we've been here, however committed we are, it's Jesus' church. Well, all of this is leading to a third problem. The problem of comparisons, the problem of generosity, and then third, the problem of pride. Why do you think these 5 o'clock workers are still waiting to be hired at 5 o'clock? Why hasn't anyone hired them yet? Probably because they're the weak and the lame and the old. And why were the all-day workers, why were they hired first at 6 o'clock in the morning? Well, probably they were the strong and the healthy and the young. And when they see these weak workers who've not only been there an hour, but it's doubtful whether they've contributed very much at all in that hour anyway, and now being paid the same as them, the same as the strong workers who've worked all day, then they're outraged. Why? Well, because of the glasses that they're wearing. They feel they deserve. What does it say about them when the weak, come lately workers are paid the same as them? It puts them on a par. Or worse, it puts them below the weak. They were there first, but this puts them last. What's the problem? It's their pride. We're better than those guys, but you're treating us the same. In fact, it looks like you're treating those guys better than us. What does it do to you when you're trying to be first? When you think you ought to be first? Makes you angry, insecure, miserable. What do you think they said to themselves on the way home from work that day? I'm not going to work for him tomorrow. If he's not going to give me the respect I'm due, I'll just go and find someone else to work for. C.S. Lewis says, pride is essentially competitive. It's not being rich that makes a person proud, but it's being richer than others. We constantly compare, and that fuels our pride. These guys who'd worked all day, they would have been perfectly happy with their denarius if the other guys either weren't there or had only got paid a tenth or quarter or whatever of a denarius. But pride makes it difficult for us to be happy when there's other people around who we don't compare favorably to. You may have heard this illustration before, but there was a survey done of Harvard graduates in the States. Would they rather have a job where they got $100,000 a year and their classmates got $50,000 a year, or a job where they got $150,000 a year, but their classmates got $200,000 a year? And most of them said they would rather get less as long as they got more than their classmates. And that's what we humans are like, isn't it? Someone preaches a brilliant sermon in the church in Mold, and part of me is thinking, oh, great. What are they going to think of my sermons? And if those sorts of thoughts linger, if we wear those glasses all the time, and then we will end up pretty bitter and twisted people, pretty isolated people. Well, there's a lot of bad news. The problem of comparisons, the problem of generosity, the problem of pride. What's the good news? The good news is life doesn't have to work like that. There is another pair of glasses you can wear to look at life. And they're the glasses of grace. You'll know people in your church family who wear those glasses of grace. I think of an elderly lady in our church. She's never been married, so no husband to look after her now for companionship. She has no children to look after her in her old age. She's in fairly constant pain in various parts of her body. She has to sleep sitting up in a chair. She loves to read, but she can't read very much anymore because of her poor eyesight. But when you talk to her, she's always so thankful for God's goodness to her. And she's always thinking about other people. She's always praying for other people. She's always witnessing to her carers. She's wearing those glasses of grace. The same person in the same circumstances could be so different, couldn't they? So bitter that life didn't work out how they hoped it would work out. No husband. God gave me no family. So self-absorbed with their own problems. You may know people like that too. I wonder what glasses we're wearing as we look at life. Do we see everything that we have as a gift? I don't deserve it. I'm not owed. I don't have a right to it, to anything. Life is a gift. That I woke up breathing this morning is a gift that I don't deserve. How do I know I don't deserve it? Because when Jesus tells this parable, he's on the way to Jerusalem. Verse 17 tells us that. Now, as Jesus was going up to Jerusalem, why does Matthew slip that in there? He's saying to us, the first was going to become the last. The one who deserved to be in the comfort of his throne, on his throne in heaven, he was going to hang on a cross. He was going to get what we deserve. Sometimes we look at our lives with the wrong pair of glasses on, and we get so frustrated at all the ways that my life isn't as great as I think it ought to be. And we might say to ourselves, or even out loud, for once, can I just get what I deserve? That's a bad prayer to pray. What do I deserve? I deserve what Jesus got. It was my sin that he took. This is God's world, and I've lived in it like it's my world. I should have loved him with all my heart, but I've loved myself, and I've demanded that everything revolve around me. But the fact that I'm alive this morning is a gift. My house is a gift. My car is a gift. My family are a gift. My church, with all its imperfections, is a gift. My friends, my abilities, the opportunities that I have to serve, they're a gift. God doesn't owe me anything. It's all his. We're just stewards. Can you imagine what it would look like to see life through those glasses of grace? Wouldn't you be happier? Wouldn't you be more content? Wouldn't you be more thankful? Wouldn't we be less self-righteous? Wouldn't we be better able to celebrate others' successes rather than resent them? Wouldn't we be better able to serve people without it being about me? Where can I get those glasses of grace? There's only one place you can get them. You can't go up the high street to get them. You can't go on the internet to get them. There's only one place you can get those glasses of grace. And it is just outside Jerusalem, where I see the one who deserves what I sometimes think I deserve, and he's getting what I actually deserve. Like the landowner in the story, the cross of Jesus levels us. The cross of Jesus says to the best of us, the strongest of us, the most faithful, the most committed, it says to us, that is what you deserve. And only when we realize that, only when we realize that we are the last, can we then be put first. The one who was first, he became last, so that the last might be put first. He got what we deserve, so that we will get what he deserves. And that's the amazing thing, isn't it, in this parable, that we are the 5 o'clock workers. We have rocked up late to the party. We've done pretty much nothing. And yet God gives us, what does God give us? Well, he doesn't give us a denarius. He gives us all his riches. He gives us his bank card and he gives us his PIN number as well. Blessed are the poor in spirit. Theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are the meek. They will inherit the earth. How can we complain about what we don't have when we realize what we do have? So the problem of comparisons, it's not fair. Problem of generosity. The problem of pride. I deserve. I'm owed. Well, Jesus is offering us in this parable a new set of glasses to wear in life. A whole new way to look at life through the lens of grace. I wonder, have you got those glasses? Have you seen the Son of God dying for you so that you could be a child of God, heirs of the King of the universe? And are you wearing those glasses each day? Are you putting them on each morning? Are you revisiting Jerusalem in your mind each morning? Reminding yourself, that's what I deserve. But look what I've got. One writer says that he has this daily mantra that he repeats to himself. One, I'm a complete idiot. Two, my future is incredibly bright. Three, anyone can get in on this. What would it look like to really, really believe that and view life through those lenses each day? I wonder, does that shape how you view your life? Are you really letting the values of Jesus' kingdom turn your life upside down? Well, let's pray together.